You're a field tech, you're a remote engineer, you're a service manager, you're HR, you're legal, you're the salesperson, you're the marketing person, you're the accountant, you know, your escalations, you're the account manager, you're the security person. You also probably run all the net admin operation side, so you got to be the master of all the tooling. And it's really hard to do so much well.
Hey guys, Damian Stevens, host of MSP Mindset, founder and CEO of Servosity. Today, I continue my mission to interview 100 of the fastest growing and most interesting MSPs on the planet. Today, I'm blessed to be joined by Gene Reich, and he talks about how he got to 5, 6, 7 employees and just ran right into this roadblock that we all see as MSPs, which is, what do I do now? I can't get past these hurdles. And the unlock for him was, this is not my final act. He realized he was called to do more. That unlock in mindset led him to starting a SaaS company, merging with another MSP, and his MSP now has over 30 employees and growing. If you'd like to know how you could unlock your mindset and unlock the growth in your MSP, don't miss out on our conversation today. Well, Gene, I'm excited to dig in today, and I wanted to go back to the beginning and say, why the heck did you start your MSP?
Yeah, I think it's a good question, right? Because, I mean, next month, I mean, everyone's been posting that January has felt incredibly long. This year, I don't know if it's because, I mean, I live in New York, so the winter's been like a proper winter, right? So it's been cold every night, every day. And I think we're just kind of looking for some reprieve. It was like 35 degrees and everyone felt great about life. You know, that's kind of the winter that we're having for those of us who have, and then I guess Florida's been cold too. So,
I'm halfway in between in South Carolina. We don't know what to do with this kind of like 20, 30 yeah. degree.
Yeah. Weather. Yeah. Yeah. And you know, it's, but all this to say is February is going to be 20 years, right? So this is kind of like, you know, we're days away from looking back of 20 years of doing something in my life. I haven't been married for 20 years. The only person I think I have a record to is like my mom or other family members, right? You know, if you think of like, okay, match something that's been 20 years in your life, there's not actual, like a lot, you know? So
yeah.
For me, I had a friend who I had worked in some freelance work with, and he was really into Oracle database consulting, right? So this is like pre-Salesforce, right? Just doing a lot of like database architecture. And at the time that I wanted to get deeper into tech, I was really fascinated by Apple, right? So I had like bought some Apple products and I was super impressed. And this came up in a lot of conversations with people that I was friends with that were technical. And he was like, hey, I can send you some Oracle stuff, but you know, my neighbor actually asked me for help, and you know, the help was fixing his VCR, right? So this is like a, you know, the classic IT guy is like, everyone who knows you is like, oh, this thing plugs in, you must be able to fix it, right? Can you fix this?
I can.
So he got it from his neighbor. Yeah.
Yeah.
Obviously, a ton in common from, you know, being a database expert and AV equipment. And so he had kind of given me that olive branch, and I didn't really know much about consulting or delivering Apple business stuff. But I think what he identified was an interest in helping people. And I think that so many businesses have an identity as something else, but they're really service businesses. Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, if you're buying a product, it's like services is kind of your service business. So that was client number one. And it was just like man with backpack wandering around New York City and having one client with consistent hours. And, you know, it just grew from there. One client at a time.
Hey, guys, Damian here. As I continue to interview the top MSPs in the world, one thing has become incredibly clear. It's time that we let go. Even more than that, every time I focus on my zone of genius and get out of the way and do the very few things I'm good at and delegate to others, I'm ready for that next level of growth. One way that I could help you is with Servosity. We co-manage your backups and disaster recovery so you can focus on what you do best, let us do the rest, and then what we do is we test the backups every single day so you never have to worry. If you'd like to engage us or just learn more, click the link below.
When we were talking before, I want to fast forward a little bit, but you talked about that there's kind of this hurdle, maybe around the million or so revenue mark. And you were talking about that could, looking back, that was some of the harder parts. I know we're jumping a long way between just starting in a million of revenue. That's huge. But like, what led to that, and how did you even know that was a struggle looking back?
Yeah. I mean, I think that there's an interesting point of reflection that came this recent week where we're trying to focus on sales and marketing. Well, we are focusing on sales and marketing, right? But we're not getting 100% the results that we want. And I think that that's another common challenge in the MSP space is an MSP that says, like, how do I grow this? And I think that sales and marketing is a slog and is a challenge for a lot of businesses, not just MSPs. I mean, this is like why America is filled with small businesses, right? I think it's hard to grow the business. And I think that people decide they don't want to be a manager and maybe they want to be that kind of worker in their trade or profession or their store or whatever they do. But there's a lot of stuff over the years that I kind of learned haphazardly, and I forgot about all the times where, you know, I hired somebody who wasn't qualified and they ruined something, and it was the end of my world for 3 months. And you forget about those things, right? Mm-hmm. But rest assured that those moments were super painful and very difficult. And I think at that size, it's really hard to isolate a lot of the business, delegate a lot of the roles, because it's hard to afford talent that can really own and take on responsibility. And that leaves a lot for owners to do, right? So you're a field tech, you're a remote engineer, you're a service manager, you're HR, you're legal, you're the salesperson, you're the marketing person, you're the accountant, your escalations, you're the account manager, you're the security person. You also probably run all the net admin operation side. So you got to be the master of all the tooling. And it's really hard to do it's really hard to do so much well. And I think that that's really a lot of the pain, and it's exhausting work, right? It's like, it's a slog and you just got to keep at it. And it's like this, right? It's sometimes it's really tough, and then you have some months that it's pretty easy and like, oh, that was really nice. And then you figure out, oh, I'm charging people or engaging in a business relationship. And it just blew up in my face because of, I remember we were mostly hourly at that time, right? And we had some weeks where like we had multiple server outages. And when you're only a few people and you have to be somewhere that's an emergency, it's like impossibly difficult. And you realize that doesn't scale, right? And you start thinking of like, oh, why did these emergencies happen and how could I prevent them? And that was kind of when the royal we, I guess that was me still at that time. But, you know, the company was like, the employees were stressed and just things were not working. And that's what led to kind of moving to more of a retainer managed services model. And the rest has evolved from there. But, you know, those were like solid 3 to 4 year increments of being at a place, doing it a certain way, having success, and then having failures, and then deciding to focus on changing an element to try to do something different, you know?
So when was this when you... Do you know what year when you decided to kind of move from hourly into some retainer or managed services work?
That was probably like the late 2000s, so 2009 maybe. mm-hmm. something like that. That was like
still pretty early in managed services.
Yeah, and I can't say that I was like a sage in the business model of managed services. I think we, you know, a very influential book for me was The Pumpkin Plan. Did you ever mm-hmm. read that one?
Mm-hmm.
And it's just such a simple way of thinking of the friction that you're seeing in your business, whether it's these people are noisy, they don't pay a lot, or the opposite, which is these people pay me everything. They say yes to everything I want, and they're really easy to work with. Mm-hmm. And there was a phase where we had like hundreds and hundreds of customers, because you take on prosumers and you take on small businesses and medium-sized businesses. And after a few years, you've got hundreds of people that expect you to pick up their phone calls. And some of that was fine and others were not. And when you realize, oh, I could cut, 80 or 90% of these customers and actually have like a similar revenue if I just focused on the ones that were, but then the time availability was like insane, you know? So that was like a pretty daunting transition where you were I was like very scared of the revenue loss. But once I started doing it, I was like, oh, this is like, okay, this feels really, it feels right. And also I was, I was referring so many of these customers to other Apple-focused MSPs in New York, and that became kind of infectious in the way of like helping other people, connecting them with customers who are good people. You know, there's always like the, hey, this group of people, amazing. They just don't want to pay anything than by the hour, but they're good people and they pay their bills. And then, you know, here's like a group of 20 that I'm not even going to tell them you exist. You know, I'm going to say, like, you can Google to try to find a new provider. And so, I think that transition was really amazing in hindsight. And that's one of the things I've kind of looked back on at the industry that, like, I'm sure like accountants and lawyers have peers and, you know, it's similar, but there's something about the MSP space where there's a generosity amongst people who are in this space of like sharing knowledge and experience and resources. Mm. And I think it just is a testament to how incredible of an opportunity it still is today to be in the space.
And so just to kind of set the tone or the context, about how many employees do you have today?
We're around 30 right now.
Okay. So that's much larger than most make it. Certainly when you focus on, let's say, Apple or some other subset of the market, what do you attribute to your growth?
Yeah, it's definitely been interesting, because a lot of times you put focus out there and you show up a certain way every day, hoping and knowing that that's the way you believe is the right way to attract the customers that you want. And then sometimes it hits and you grow, and sometimes it doesn't. And I think, I'd gotten my MSP, we were about 10 full-time people about, and another Apple consultant in the city had approached me and said, hey, you know, like, we're around the same size, and I'm feeling pretty exhausted as an owner, right? From the, there's so much about owning a business that is a choice, right? It's a choice that, hey, I don't want to pick up my phone after 6 o'clock at night, right? Mm-hmm. So it's a choice, yeah. Right? And some customers will choose to accept that and others will not, right? And you build a business based off of what you accept and what other people decide to accept. And as a business owner, you can accept that you have shortcomings, shortfalls, and you can decide whether you dig in deeper and fix that, or you are like, I'm good, right? This is good enough for me. And there are really no wrong answers. I mean, I know a lot of people who run small MSPs who have a very wonderful life balance and work balance and who make great money. And if you look like economically are doing just fine. And they don't need to be, you know, 50 people or whatever. The employee count is not like a thing. They don't need a bigger business. They're happy with what they have, mm-hmm. right? And I think both of us decided that we would be better off together. And we merged, and the company really accelerated after that. And we were able to hire management to kind of augment our weaknesses. And then we focus on other stuff. And it's been, you know, you just realize you got new challenges, right? But it's been good though. It's been good after that point.
About how many employees did you have when you went into this merger? Just your company?
About 10. We're about 9 or okay. 10, something like that.
So somewhere around there, maybe similar size company. And what year was this?
Probably 2020 when I actually merged. 2021, okay. Something like that.
Okay. Yeah, during the height of COVID.
It was a pretty weird time. But I had also done a merger with one of my customers that was actually, because I think I was like looking for a way to accelerate my growth. I'll put this, let me find this quote. It's like, this is a very good quote. So I was talking to one of my advisors, right? I think that you have like, I don't know for you, if you have like a personal board of directors, right? Maybe you've found people that you attach to that accept you, and that you can call them and say like, hey, I'm in a bind, or like, this just happened. I don't feel good about it. Or I'm trying to figure out this. Am I thinking about it the right way? And as I look to spend more time in the software space of my life, and like think about myself as a professional, as an entrepreneur, you know, what am I good at? Where does that leave me? You know, what do I spend my time doing? Right. I'm having those kind of discussions internally to figure out what makes me impactful as a human and satisfied as a human. Right. And he's like, yeah, it sounds like this line in the Shawshank Redemption about prison. And it says, you know, these walls are funny. First you hate them, then you get used to them. Enough time passes, you get so you depend on them. That's institutionalized. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's been phases of my MSP where it's just all I know. And so I keep doing all I know, but that's maybe not the best thing for me. And it's maybe not the best use of my time. And so, it's been good to kind of move through some of those transitions. But that kind of accurately depicted a lot of the feelings I had of like being in a position or having a responsibility where I just feel completely stuck, but I just stay in there. I just stay in that cycle.
Is that feeling stuck what led you to look for a merger?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. It'd been like, 12, 13, maybe 13 or 14 years, right? And I got to a certain place and I realized maybe I don't want to, I think I identified I really liked helping people, but I didn't, and I like technology, but I didn't look forward to the new release of an OS or a new tool that does something under the hood. That's kind of like, I understood it, but it wasn't really like what motivated me. And when I kind of had that and I was pretty solid on that thought, I was like, well, what do I do with that? Right. Because I'm going to have to change some things around if I'm going to keep in this business. Then it becomes more of a business to run from a point of view to be focused on my family and economics. Now, I think that a lot of challenge in early day MSP life is not running a business economically focused. Right. So I'm not saying don't do that. And you can't do that if you're small. Like I didn't. Right. And I guess that was maybe a little bit of a regret, but realizing that maybe I had to figure something else out was kind of that place after 15 years. You know, it's like a, in another related example, you know, my lawyer and accountant, they love what they do every day. And they have small practices and, you know, they wake up and they're very good at what they do, and they're, both of them could retire, right? But this is what they really want to do. And I really understand that for them. But that was like deciding not that that was what I wanted to do the rest of my life. I was like, okay, then what? You know, I'm holding a bag here. I got to pay people. They depend on me. Clients depend on me. Like, what's the plan here? So that was kind of, you know, led me to those adventures and mergers and things like that.
So for you, what did it mean to merge? Like, what were you hoping to get out of that?
So the first one I went through was with a customer, and, you know, their owner has a very incredible track record as an entrepreneur in the finance space. And his vision was to put together 5 or 6 businesses and build like a small business platform, right? And that platform would be able to grow as a platform, incentivize. I mean, it's no different than like, you know, ConnectWise or Kaseya buying a company and being like, oh, look, like, you know, you've bought our ticketing system, now buy our RMM tool, right? It's their cost of acquisition of customers on each segment becomes more inexpensive when you already have a buying relationship with somebody. So that was kind of the plan, and it was just, it felt really interesting to me to build something new and to get to a company that was like, had this grand vision, and being a part of the executive team that kind of did that. And so, you know, we had merged, and then COVID hit, and that basically changed a lot of the economics for a lot of the businesses involved. And it kind of broke the momentum of that vision. And yeah, it was pretty weird. I mean, you know, I knew that the people I was working with were good people, so I didn't really have any worry about, oh, this is not good for everybody, what's going to happen, right? So I was able to kind of make it through that. And I'd been talking to my current partner about merging prior to that. And I said, look, I got this other opportunity. Maybe you want to come in on this deal. And he was like, I don't know. That doesn't really sound like what I want to do. And I was like, okay, fine. And then I did that whole thing and it didn't really work out. So then we moved, you know, I called him back and said, hey, this didn't work out for me. Maybe merging with you is probably a better thing. So, you know, that's what we ended up doing. And I think the real impetus for that was like getting some management in to handle things that him and I were not really good at. And so that was kind of the impetus of like trying to move the business forward so that you could have, I could have like more headspace and focus to fix the other side of the business that I felt I could work on. And that's what we did. That's what we did. And it's been really, I'm very grateful for that. It's probably one of the best things I've done in my work relationship.
Yeah. So is that one of the ways you got past that $1 to $2 million hurdle that where you're the guy that has to own everything, but you can't really afford management team yet?
Yeah. I mean, that was like how we both got through it. I think, you know, we're both at that size and slowly growing, right? And by combining and, you know, sharing profit and providing with other people to come in and do stuff, that was kind of how we got to it together. And it turned out to be great, you know, turned out to be really good. I mean, of course, it doesn't mean that everything's like easy and, you know, there's not challenges, right? But, you know, it did address and fulfill the initial desire of trying to remove yourself from things you're not good at and place other people who maybe were better at that. So that was definitely a win. It was also unusual, right? Like I went from being everything to being kind of managing everything and helping people do like that brain dump of like you know, all the stuff you as a solo owner institutionalize that you don't document. Yeah. I mean, it's hard enough to do it when you're trying to deliver service and software and tooling and a methodology and standardized stack stuff and certify people on that. But then there's the whole back office, like quoting products, vendors, partners, accounting, legal, you know, all of that stuff was like also challenging to kind of rip out.
Mm.
But needed.
Yeah. So I'm curious, for all the folks that are listening, like how many years were you kind of bumping your head up against this? Like, what do I do if I'm... You know, I'm in this place where I know this and I call myself an MSP and I love your quote and I'm institutionalized, like the walls are the walls. I'm used to them before you decided to change and ultimately make this merger.
Yeah, I think so much about that hasn't gone away in certain regards. Like I'm still thinking like, how do I get this business to the next place and what do I do to fix these things, right? Mm-hmm. And I guess that's part of the fun, right? It's a pretty... owning a business is incredibly dynamic and very challenging mentally task, right? It's just... it has its own sets of challenges. It's not for everybody as well, right?
Right.
As you know. And I think one of the things that felt the hardest was like, you know, coming from a life that I consider like highly privileged, right? Meaning I grew up and I had the opportunity to go to college and it was something that was like a kind of expected, but also like, I think it was really fortunate for me in hindsight. But you know, when you're 18, trying to figure out what you want to do for the rest of your life, I think that's pretty... it's a pretty insane ask of a human to come out of a high school and be like, well, you know, so oftentimes I found myself looking back at like, is this really what I wanted to do when I was, you know, when I was 18, is that really, was I focused? Was I really asking like what makes me happy or what's a good job, right? What's a practical thing to do? And so I think that was like a lot of my own struggle was kind of going back and forth between that and deciding, do I just stop and do something else? I don't know what that is, but accept the risk and take all the stuff that I've built and just kind of put it by the wayside. Or do I like stick in it and try to make it a little bit more lucrative and try to move it forward and be okay with the fact that maybe this isn't, you know, what I wanted to do when I graduated high school, right? Or that wasn't what I should be doing in my life. And I think it's okay to change careers. I mean, I think that that's a pretty healthy thing. But I certainly like technology, and I'm still a part of it in the software side, right? So I didn't move too far away from that. But I think that was probably my biggest spin cycle, was deciding that and understanding what do I do with that kind of realization that this maybe is not what I thought I'd want to do the whole life.
Mm, yeah. So you finally decided your identity wasn't just an MSP. And then you decided to go and do the merger as part of the action you took. But what was it that changed within you that made you say, this is... you know, I've got another act. I've got another... there's another plan here.
Well, I mean, I think in reflection, there are kind of some reasons why I started my own business, right? I mean, I studied public accounting, and the career path was like, hey, come work at this big 5 accounting firm, and for the next 5 or 6 years, you're going to work 80 hours a week and sleep at the office sometimes, and... but then you have a path to be successful. And I thought that was like wildly insane to give so much of myself and my life to another person or company for a paycheck. I don't know. It just, that never really felt right. So I think I started thinking like, well, I started a business. What about that? Why, what, like, what's the why in starting an MSP? Let's just say it was a business, not a managed service provider. And so, I spent some time focusing on that and realizing that maybe starting businesses or owning a business is kind of what I'm meant to do. And so when you start thinking about that, you're like, oh, well, I could learn a lot here. And I have learned a lot, right? Like, I've learned a lot about legal and accounting and how to treat people and how to run a business. And I'm still learning every day. And I mean, you never stop learning, right? And I think that that's when I realized that, it kind of sounds like, okay, cool. I'll just like dig in a little bit from that perspective, right?
Was there a book or a mentor or some other person that helped you kind of see those different angles and make that transition?
No, I mean, yeah, I think it's funny. Like, there's that evolution. There's always that like time travel evolution thing. Like, you go back in time, don't kill that butterfly.
You know? Right.
Right. And then things that humans have three legs or, you know, five arms, whatever. Right. And, you know, when I had the opportunity to start Traceless, and we got a lot of signal of product market fit, I felt overcome with gratitude. And I couldn't figure out exactly, you know, what it was that led me here. You start thinking of the chain of events that led to the moment you think of something. And it's nearly impossible to figure out, you know, was it the networking group that I went to for 2 years? Was it the peer group I tried to be a part of? Was it coming to conferences? Was it showing up to a dinner one night? Was it asking a hard question to somebody that was a stranger? And, you know, you have all these like accumulation of things that you just, that leads you to the next part of your life. And I think that that's what it is. In my mind, it wasn't, understanding that people might have profound experiences in life or singular books that the paradigm gets shifted in their brain. But that wasn't, I don't think that that's exactly how, for me, it operated.
So you brought up Traceless. So now you're not only owning an MSP, you decided to start a company serving MSPs. In a SaaS model, if I understand. What year was that?
That was 2019. So right around COVID also.
Okay. So I guess in the order of things, you really started a SaaS business and then merged your MSP. Tell me about that balance, right? But especially before you merge, because you're still like maybe 10 employees. It's already hard. Now you've started another company and you're getting the signals of product market fit, which is wonderful. But, you know, tell me what that felt like to be doing all those things.
It was kind of, in a minute, the world kind of felt like we were at a standstill. And I don't think I reacted well to that. And, you know, personally, my wife and I were in Brooklyn, and, you know, the beginnings of COVID in New York City, I, you know, it's interesting because I had so many MSP friends that just had such different experience through that whole transition. But in New York City, we really had, it was scary in the fact that people were, hospitals were full and people didn't know what the hell was going on. And, you know, most people you knew had lost somebody, or they were on intubators or whatever, you know. It's just like, it was like very crazy. So my wife and I basically left the city and moved in with my mom, upstate New York, where I live now. And, glad to say I don't live at my mom's anymore, but we, you know, we still, the plan was we'd all live next to each other, which we do now. And,
that's awesome.
Yeah. And that, I mean, that experience was like, my wife and I had one kid. He was like one at that time about, he was a, and, you know, I was kind of starting Traceless, and I had gone through that first merger, and I needed to call out my intellectual property assignments for that deal. And incorporating Traceless was probably the most clear way to do that. And so that's, you know, Peter, my co-founder, we incorporated and we're like, yeah, let's just get going on this. And, you know, we both were like nights and weekends for the first few years, trying to get things going. But, you know, going back to COVID, it's like, it was like Groundhog's Day. I was like, wake up, have breakfast, work on the place that I eat breakfast, lunch, and dinner, right? See my family all day long, drink wine, fall asleep on couch, wake up and work. Or, you know, it was just like, it was kind of like limiting. And so I think I really buried myself in work a little bit more than was normal. And of course there's always something when you start something, it's potentially not as hard as when it kind of grows up a little bit. Right. And so, the balance was a little bit different than it is now as I'm trying to focus more on Traceless. But that's kind of how that all kind of came together.
Yeah. It's really interesting to me that you did that first before merging. So you didn't have management team yet. You're trying to find the time in the day to kind of give birth to this new company as well.
Yeah. And that was like the first merger, right? So I'd gone into that and split it off, and that was right before COVID, you know, and then COVID hit and it was like, oh my God, what's happening? Sky's falling, you know, the whole New York City thing, move in, really work on both companies. And I think that it was, you know, I'm glad I did it. I feel grateful for all the things I've been able to work on and the people that are around me in both sides of my life, and my family. But it definitely is like, it takes a toll to try to manage all these things. And I think I'm glad I'm still able to focus on it because it's certainly challenging at times.
If you fast forward to now, I'm curious, how do you divide your time with your MSP versus Traceless?
Yeah. I mean, I think there's balance and there's not balance, right? Sometimes it's all at once. And there's certainly been periods of time where it's felt like there's not enough to go around in my entire life. That was like a lot of last year. Felt that way. But, you know, on the MSP side, it's delegating responsibilities and trying to further delegate that. And on the Traceless side, working to be more consistent in certain areas so that I just know, hey, I'm going to try to, because, you know, it's the hard thing as a business owner. You have to be responsible for everything.
Mm-hmm.
But like, absolutely, that doesn't necessarily equate like thinking critically about what you do with the time that you have, regardless if you're responsible for everything. You know, you still have some time, and what do you do with that time? And so I've tried to be thoughtful about finding the time and finding augmentation where my weaknesses are faster, right, on the Traceless side. And so I think we're making some good moves this year to help that. And, you know, I think the real story here also is that everything in my personal life is going too fast and everything in the work life doesn't go fast enough.
Yeah.
So it's like that. Yeah. So you're like living these complete polar opposite parallels, and that's kind of a trip to really think about how to reconcile those two things. I don't have an answer, but hopefully it gives people, some perspective that they're not maybe alone in that journey. Yeah.
So why was last year a big challenge for you?
You know, last year, you know, on the personal side, we had our third kid.
Congratulations.
Which was a lot. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, it was great. And so that's, anytime you bring a kid into the world, you know, your life just is different for very tactical reasons. And so that was one. And we also built a house. So it's like, And I didn't plan, I mean, on that necessarily, right? I think that there's like things, initiatives you start and then you accept the consequence of when they all fall in line. And so we actually started thinking about building our house like right around when COVID hit. And it just took us that long to get to the place where we actually built it. And it was like in the same line where we felt like we wanted to have another kid and we decided to do it all at the same time. So I think that was kind of a bit much, but yeah. It's all behind us now. So
yeah. That sounds like a ton.
Yeah.
So has it been your goal to kind of move back from day-to-day operations at your MSP?
Yeah. Yeah. That's, I think like I said, it's going to be 20 years for me. And I think that it's been a good run. And I think that, whenever I've been able to find the right person, it injects so much energy into what I've created and what my co-founder or my partner at the MSP has created. So, you know, first, it's very scary because going back to like when we were a million or 2 million or whatever, you know, you got five or six people and one person's just horrible influence. You're like, oh man, I can't delegate anything. Right. Yeah. And then you hire somebody, you're like, wow, that's like this person's like incredible, but I pay them the same. Right. And then you learn, oh, you got to hire good people. Right. And you learn what that means and how amazing that is. And so I think hiring somebody to take over my last bit of responsibilities from a daily perspective is what we're looking to do now. And I think that will really breathe more life into the business. And it's fun for me to support all these people. I think it's like a role that it doesn't take a lot of time for me. Mm-hmm. And it's really, it feels right. So that's what I'm focused on this quarter.
That's huge. What do you think that role looks like?
This one's sales and marketing for sure.
Okay.
This is like somebody to focus on revenue, really. The rest of it, we have amazing people handling the other areas of the business. So this is the last little bit. And, you know, like I think a lot of other MSP owners, I don't think I did a great job at it, but I did okay.
Yeah, I can relate to that.
Yeah, I mean, so like, you know, God bless everyone, whatever, but like we're not typically great salespeople, right? That's a trade and a craft that you can spend, you know, 10 years as working from intern to BDR to SDR to account executive to whatever, right? And then you get good at being a salesperson. And I think that, you know, closing referrals is what most of us get used to, and that's not the same. And so I think that having that level of like upskilling in the org will make it just creates so much opportunity for everybody. I mean, think about all the all the people who are on a service desk position that want to be a hired tier engineer, right? And you want to provide that opportunity to grow for them. And you can't unless you're growing your business. And I think that was like another thing when we merged our two companies where, you know, I kind of felt I took care of everyone pretty well, but people weren't getting like, they didn't have like a career path, right? They got to work in a very calm environment for somebody who took care of them, for people that were customers that were overall very good people. I mean, that's something. Right. But it's not exactly like after doing that for so many years, it kind of feels a little stale, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the head of revenue is not the easiest one. Do you have a plan for that? Or are you just beginning that kind of journey to figure out what that looks like?
We're a month in from that. So I think that we're trying to find somebody who, I mean, you know, like anything, a referral is a nice place to start from. And so we put out feelers to all of our friends and friends of the family and, you know, network. And we have some recruiters that are going to start looking for the person. And so I think that's kind of where we're at right now. And it's good. You know, you just got to stay tenacious on figuring it out. I think it, you know, it's hard, right? You know, you're figuring out something that you're not good at and you haven't done before. And you forget that you figured that out with, you know, managing computers and managing email and securing endpoints and accounting and billing and legal. You know, all that stuff was learned. And most MSP owners out there figured that out. So I look at this as just something objectively that is a solvable problem that we have to solve. And we're going to solve it. And that's how I keep saying about it as well.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, you know, you just get down in the weeds and it's a lot of hard feelings, you know?
Absolutely. So why did you start Traceless?
So, you know, I was in this peer group and it eventually became a cybersecurity advisory council for ConnectWise. And I realized I had some vulnerabilities in my own MSP. And I was like, wow, I got to like protect the industry. You know, that was kind of grab my cape and, you know, try to get it done for everybody. And so that's kind of the real like why of starting Traceless. It's funny. I was just chatting with somebody on LinkedIn today and this person's under their LinkedIn profile. They're like, award-winning CISO, top-rated keynote speaker, best-selling author, but really just trying to leave the world more secure than how I found it. And I think that that's just like a very, that really resonated with me today because I'm like, oh man, that's kind of why I'm doing this thing with Traceless, right? And you're just like, hey man, I'm just trying to help people make their operations more secure, make their customers more secure. And that's why.
Mm. So what does the next chapter look like for you, Gene?
So, you know, on the MSP side, we're looking at growing. And I think that my partner and I really wanted to do that thoughtfully when we wanted to work towards that so that him and I were not such critical elements into that, because then you really have a business that you can do something with, right? We can empower employees to share in the profit. We can find partners to go merge with. We can think about an exit. I mean, it's just like the opportunity is open and you can choose. And having that power of choice is a very freeing, it's very freeing. And I think that that's really, as an entrepreneur, it's like high risk, right? And it needs to be high reward. And I think that that's, I mean, you know, I started one because I liked helping people, and I started the other because I want to make businesses, especially MSPs, more secure, right? Mm-hmm. That doesn't describe like high risk, high reward. It describes like warm and fuzzy feelings, right? And, you know, with Traceless, I feel like we're going to come out with some new products this year, and I feel like we're at an inflection point of growth that is exciting. So continue to focus on product and adoption and revenue is probably going to be this year.
That sounds exciting to be in that next stage.
Yeah. And I think that like on the personal side, I'm just trying to go to the gym 3 days a week, just as like a, how do I measure success today or this week is like 3 days a week. No excuses, you know, not feeling great, you're busy, your kids are, you know, you didn't sleep great, whatever, go to the gym. And I think that that's also, I think, a big part of what I feel like this year's success will be is if I'm consistent around my well-being and health.
Mm, yeah. It makes a huge difference when you actually put your health first.
Yeah, it's hard to show up for other people if you're not showing up for yourself.
Mm-hmm. Well said.
Yeah, I mean, that was a painful learn, right?
So. I can very much relate to that, yep.
Yeah.
So, Gene, what would you say is the biggest lesson you've learned in all your years in business?
Yeah, so there's an interesting blog written by Paul Graham, who's one of the Y Combinator founders. And I think it's called like How Not to Die or something like that, right? And it's kind of whimsical, but it's also kind of true, right? He's like, I wish I had better news for everybody out there. The only consistent statistic that I can tie to success and not success is not dying, right, as a company.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry that this is so blunt, but like those of you who don't will statistically are very likely to become very wealthy. Mm-hmm. And he's, of course, talking about this startup specific ecosystem and stuff, right? And the rest of you won't. And just like very cut and dry. And I think that, you know, we've talked a lot today about getting into those places where you're not sure if you want to keep going, right? Mm-hmm. And there's nothing wrong with stopping. So this isn't like a criticism to anyone who's deciding to do other things or change direction, right? But you asked a very specific question. And I think in hindsight, like not taking a knee, not stopping, not it's, you know, just pushing through those hard times is probably the simplest attribution to success that I could find. Because it's going to be hard. It's going to, you know, unforeseen things will happen. And yeah. And you choose how to respond to that.
Yeah. If there was one thing you could do differently or over, what would that be?
Probably would have had a little bit more fiscal focus and responsibility on the early years of owning my MSP. You know, mm-hmm. It's kind of like New York City is a pretty fun place to be single. I'm young,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so that was, you know, I didn't have as much focus on the business side of things. And I like in hindsight, I don't think that it would have been much more overhead, but it would have yielded much different results, right? And so I think that that's probably what I would have changed.
That's good advice. Well, given where you are and all the changes in the world industry, what's something that you're looking forward to?
I think that I'm close to unlocking some big steps in my own career. And I'm looking forward to getting those unlocked this year. Mm-hmm. You know, the industry is pretty interesting, right? It's really an incredibly generous economy. And I look forward to it continuing for all of those involved and, you know, who participate. It's meaningful. So it's fun to see it evolve and change. And I'm excited to see people continue to thrive in it.
Let's flip that around. What's your biggest challenge right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's understanding how to augment the right people around me with sales and marketing to really thrive. But I think I'm getting close, right? So I think a year ago that might have felt even harder.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is there one book that you would recommend others read?
Well, I think if you're a smaller MSP, right, I would say The Pumpkin Plan is a great one.
Mm-hmm.
That distilled a lot of feelings for me.
By the way, great authors. I've interviewed them. So you can check out the episode here.
Yeah, perfect.
Yeah, really, really good guys. Dave and Sean are really good guys.
Yeah. And I think that that's, it's fun, right? Those people are generous and love what they're doing. And,
so much.
Yeah. One that I'm reading now is called The Great Game of Business. So that one is some, one I'm excited about. Yeah, does that, the previous one is probably one I'd say any business, read it. It's very applicable. And then this one is just one I'm reading right now, you know, on how to think about things in the future.
Well, Gene, for folks that would love to connect with you or reach out, how can they find you?
Yeah. So I think LinkedIn is probably the easiest place. I'm not as active on other social platforms. So you can find me on LinkedIn, go to the mspoint.co. So .co. Or traceless.com and check out those things. But LinkedIn is for me personal. So if there's anything I said that resonates, you want to talk more about, I mean, I think that that's, no one ever takes me up on this, but I, you know, I've taken people up on their offers and it's really helped me in my career. So I always try to like offer that to people.
Yes. There are people that listen and there are people that take action. So if you're listening, yep. Which one will you be? Because Gene made that offer. So you have an opportunity. I love that.
Exactly. Yeah, just get in touch.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for your presence and your wisdom, Gene. And thank you for being on MSP Mindset.
Yeah, appreciate you having me. It was good to be here.